and welcome to Fidelity Connects by Fidelity Investments Canada, connecting you to the world of investing and helping you stay ahead. Portfolio manager Steve Buller joins Pamela Ritchie for another Fidelity Connects podcast. He discusses his thoughts on the impact of a vaccine and the outlook for 2021. In terms of vaccine news, Steve says the vaccine is positive for the economy and for commercial real estate. He says it will be good for the retail, office, and hotel sectors, which have been hit hard during the pandemic. He points out that with a forecast of a pending vaccine, the level of clarity has improved as now there is light at the end of the tunnel. But he also says we won't go back to the way things exactly were in the real estate sectors. As Steve looks ahead to 2021, he is most interested in data centers, manufactured housing, and single-family rentals. Commentary surrounding COVID-19 and financial markets is frequently changing. Today's podcast was recorded on November 20th, 2020. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of Fidelity Investments Canada, ULC, or its affiliates. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment, tax, or legal advice. It is not an offer to sell or buy or an endorsement, recommendation, or sponsorship of any entity or security cited. Read a fund's prospectus before investing. Funds are not guaranteed. Their values change frequently and past performance may not be repeated. Fees, expenses, and commissions are all associated with fund investments.
Steve, let's begin with the vaccine, what it means for the prospect of back to work, but really the overall sector. How do you look at this through your lens?
Yeah, obviously it's a positive for humanity. It's a positive for the economy going forward. And it's also, as a subset of the economy, it's a positive for commercial real estate. We have seen the sectors, for example, the gathering sectors, the ones where people could contract COVID-19, have been hit the most, whether it's retail, whether it's hotels, whether it's office. And they have rebounded here with the recent announcements. But the other sectors, which did well pre-pandemic, during the pandemic, and we would even envision post-pandemic, industrial, single family rentals, data centers. We actually think those will continue too. Even they're not going to pause because the pandemic has been solved.
Right. And as you say, potentially continue on there. You know, let's just go to residential for a second. We're going to fan out across the various parts of real estate, but you said single family home. Let's kind of discuss the urbanization, suburbanization trends. Have they been overstated? What do you see?
Yeah, I think they have been overstated. Without a doubt, it has, and I think it will a little bit still occur in the New Yorks, the Londons, the Torontos, the San Franciscos. But other cities, Edmonton, Houston, Manchester in the United Kingdom, these are cities where you didn't have this huge urban vertical population that needed or wanted to, and desired and even had the wherewithal to get out and get out in a hurry. So I do think that it has been a little overstated, but without a doubt, it has occurred in those cities.
Interesting how much clarity at this point. You would have a lot more clarity than pretty much all of us watching, listening here right now. But has more clarity come through as more economic numbers have been released? We've seen things like new housing starts. I mean, we've just sort of accrued a bit more data from the early days of the pandemic crisis and where sort of the bottom fell out of things. What level of clarity do you have at this point, would you say?
It's improved, obviously, because now we have, you know, there's light at the end of the tunnel. And you can then model or forecast whether it's 6 months, 12 months, or 18 months when we're going to reach the new normal, that is, where a large percentage of the population is going to be vaccinated, and you're no longer worried within your daily activities about contracting COVID-19. So I do, though, think we're not going to go back to the way things were in many real estate, commercial real estate sectors. But overall, though, we are going to reach a new normal.
So tell us about the trends that we know about, the e-commerce, the retail discussion. I mean, There are some places that have really taken this on. I mean, a lot of us are buying our groceries and probably gifts for holidays and so on. But there are parts of the world where the penetration of e-commerce had not been very strong. Can you sort of point to some of those subtleties of where there's still room for an uptick, essentially?
I would definitely, in a place like Singapore, or I had a call yesterday with a Mexican logistics facilities owner operator, and those are places that e-commerce penetration was relatively low pre-pandemic, but we're seeing huge accelerations in growth rates. And once people get on the platform or see the benefits that something you can order very quickly, have a huge selection, and it shows up at your door, whether the same day or the next day, that's irreversible, in my opinion.
That's interesting, and that's sort of, as you say, it's like a growing trend. It's got room to grow. What about this huge discussion of, growth to value? Where does real estate fit within that? We know interest rates are staying on the bottom here for a long time, or are they? Is there something to think about on the inflation front? Take us through some of those dynamics.
Yeah, I mean, the growth to value trade within the global listed real estate sector, we have seen the similar trends over the last couple of weeks, where the value sectors, the ones that were beating down the most, whether it was retail, hotel, offices, have come back with a vengeance. And I mean, I've actually been somewhat underweight, some of them, especially the retail sector. So on a relative basis, it's been painful. But at the same time, I do think short, medium, longer term, the structural issues that bricks and mortar retail has, they are not going away. And if anything, they have been accelerated due to the pandemic. We just talked about e-commerce, but let's take even the work from home phenomena. The majority of tenants in a mall-based retailer are apparel. And if people are going to be working from home, whether it's 1 or 2 days a week, I would argue that they need a few less nicer clothes in their closets to wear to work. So yes, will there be some initial pent-up demand? Yes, but longer term, I actually think that the apparel, which is a huge component still of the mall-based retailers, will continue to struggle because of the work from home phenomena. So tying two different parts of real estate together and how they could impact one another.
One of the things that was coming in to take up some of the retail space before the pandemic were, I mean, there were lots of gyms, smaller gyms. Now some people are climbing onto the bike and doing their own exercises. And where does all that fit going forward, do you think?
Yeah, I do think it's the similar to e-commerce trend. The gyms, there will be without a doubt people that go back to the gyms, but then there are people that bought their Peloton, they bought their Mirror, they realize, huh, I don't have to pay this large monthly subscription to go to a physical place, but rather I can do it in my home or even my apartment and have that. So that's part of the digitalization that we see, whether it's Netflix and movie theaters, Peloton and gyms. So the digitalization theme, and one reasons why we're overweight, for example, data center, is everything that's did the increased digitalization of the world, everything goes is stored in a data center or flows through a data center.
Let's take a trend like that international. I mean, there are various parts of the world that perhaps are more attractive to invest in just because of the country and the leadership and perhaps the government situation. But that is obviously something that is also happening all over the world. Where do you look for data center opportunities? Are they solely in the US, North America, or do they go across the globe?
They go across the globe, but we do see the phenomena where many are listed here in the US and they have increasingly larger non-US data centers or co-location facilities, if you will. So a majority of them do have a US listing, but the trend, which is a North American, is in front of the digitalization trend and the usage of data centers. The rest of the world, though, is quickly catching up. So it is a thematic that we're continuing to play.
Within industrialization, we talk a lot about ESG, actually, as you well know. I'm sure you hear it a few times a day. And some of the trends that lead towards that. Are there ways to incorporate the green story and the S and the G as well, the environmental and all of those into the way you look at things, or was that already there, for instance?
Yeah, I mean, ESG obviously is hugely topical in the broader equity market and in our little world of listed real estate securities. It is estimated that buildings, both residential and commercial, emit approximately 40% of all carbon gases. So the focus of reducing CO2 emissions is very much on the building, the physical building itself. I would say that the listed real estate world, given that they're larger enterprises, majority of them actually have an ESG team, so they are at the forefront. And at the same time, it's as much they want to do this, but it's because their customer, i.e., the tenant, whether it's an individual leasing an apartment or a company leasing office space, they increasingly want to be in a green building. So you do see that it's almost mandatory for them to do that.
There anything in terms of subtleties of office? I think we've talked about this before a little bit, but going back to the office is it can mean different things in different places across the world. Can you sort of discuss that? Because again, I wonder if it's overdone, the discussion of not going back to the office. Where is it overdone? Where is it not?
It's interesting because office, we used to, pre-pandemic, just concentrate on occupancy rates and rental rates. And now utilization rate is the new term. That is, what percentage today of an office building is actually being utilized? For example, in New York City, it's in less than 10%. In London, it's estimated to be about 20%. In Tokyo, it's almost 95 to 100% utilization. And some of that's cultural reasons, and some of it is just they've done a better job, especially in the Far East countries, of dealing with the pandemic itself. But for example, why is Tokyo or Singapore or Hong Kong, their utilization rate so much higher than Western Europe or North America? It's also their work from home phenomenon is not as easy. Majority of them live in much smaller apartments. I mean, a typical apartment in Hong Kong is 40 square meters or 400 square feet. So to have a for a family of four, so to have a separate room or office or dedicated space to work from is virtually, to play on words, impossible to do. So hence why you see going back to the office in that part of the world much more accelerated than other places.
Lots of questions rolling in for you here, Steve. One of them you've certainly answered, I think, on the shopping malls. The investor is asking, is there an opportunity for them to be repurposed? I mean, how do you look at the land that they sit on if it's not used for malls? How would you use it?
Yeah, I mean, you will hear and see, and it will occur, but I'd be careful though, because the economics actually don't work in a lot of instances to take an old mall and repurpose it. Because one, it has to be a failing mall, and you still need to get rid of the tenants, and you may even have to buy them out. Secondly, you have to then go to the city, town, state, whatever jurisdiction, and get permission to do it. And let's say you have a mall and you want to convert it to a logistics facility. Well, you could be in a residential area, and many the town or whatever, we don't want to have all these trucks coming in. And then you get to the economics, because even with a failing retail, their rents are higher than a typical logistics facility. So the economics for a developer to actually do that may not happen. Without a doubt, it's occurring, and it will occur, but I don't think you're going to see every failed retail site around the world then convert to something else. It could just be simply left there to die, and as like we like to say, you'll see the grass start growing in the parking lot.
Right, interesting. So maybe we could use some more green space, probably everywhere. Use some more green space. This is an interesting question. You just touched on it actually a minute ago, speaking about Japan, how big, or actually, sorry, Hong Kong, and how big the homes can be. So the question is, do you run any financial models running different work from home scenarios? Example, 50% go back to work full time, 30% stay at home. Is that one way to look at it, or?
Yeah, no, we've spent the last couple of weeks or months a lot of time trying to determine, figure out quantitatively what the damage to office will be. As I said earlier, I think the damage will be, in terms of demand, when I say damage, will be most pronounced in North America and perhaps some Western European cities. I think it'll be less so in the Far East, as I alluded to earlier. One of the issues, though, is work from home. Everybody, I think majority of people will go back to the office in some way, shape, or form. They might go on average 2 to 3 days a week back to the office. Unfortunately, everyone wants to work from home on Monday and Friday. So guess what? That doesn't exactly work in terms of less office space needed. So I think it's going to have to be one of these more regulated type things where you can't just go Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday and to the office because the company itself, most enterprises around the world realize that work from home functions. The employees want it, and they will offer it in a variety of different tasks. Now, not all tasks, but a variety of different tasks that people do. But I think it's going to be a little mandated of what days of the week that people are going to be able to do that because the companies themselves want to reduce the expense of office space. In many companies of law firms or accounting firms, outside of paying their people, their office occupancy is actually one of the second highest expense. So they will want to reduce that in the future.
I've noticed they've been selling some of the art on the walls, so don't need the walls for the art in some large offices. There are all these different little pieces of it. One thing I just wanted to kind of come back to is the inflation story. I mean, real estate is a real asset. We talk about real assets. How does that fit into the way people are thinking right now about inflation, about, well, and rates being very, very low? Where do you look at, all of these dynamics with monetary stimulus sloshing around, coming back to the real estate story?
Yeah, I mean, it's been proven over long periods of time that real estate is an inflation hedge. And there's a couple reasons for that. One, many leases have inflation adjustments in it around the world. So if there is any type of inflation, you can then capture that in the leases. Or if you're in shorter lease type things like a hotel room or apartment, which in North America typically has a 1 to 2 year lease duration, you capture it just on the renewals itself. So you do have that type of inflation hedge. The second, if there's inflation, also means that construction costs usually are going up. So to replicate the building itself, you do see then that inflation is captured there. And the third reason is land. Mark Twain said, we're not creating any more land around the world. And there's in many, for example, logistics facilities near population centers, we see a huge inflation for land to build new ones just because of the high desire. So one could argue there's inflation hedge there itself.
Interesting. So back to the question of those that are reading headlines of, this rotation into value, where does real estate fit in there? How does that speak
Yeah.
to a switching up? People still want to be exposed to equities in a lot of cases. This is an area that is a differentiator. Just sort of discuss where it fits.
Yeah, I mean, we've done this analysis and we call it food for thought. That is, if you go back to the way back when, I'm dating myself here, back to 1998, 99, we had the tech telecom bubble. And there, in that period, global property securities, global REITs did quite poorly. When the bubble burst, one of the best performing sectors or asset classes was actually global REITs. Now you go back to the global financial crisis. In the global financial crisis, one of the worst performing sectors was global REITs. Thereafter, starting in March of 2009, for a couple years, one of the best sectors and asset classes was global REITs. Now you go back to the pandemic here. Now, in the pandemic, especially the first couple of months, global REITs underperformed global equities. More recently, we've started to see them modestly outperforming. So I call this food for thought because, without a doubt, I cannot guarantee that the past is going to, replay itself in the future in terms of relative outperformance of global REITs versus global equities. But I just find it very interesting when we compare these, large disruptive events of the tech telecom bubble, the global financial crisis, and now COVID-19. And the relative performance of global REITs versus global equities.
And as you say, or as Mark Twain said, I mean, there is a scarcity. There are more people on the planet, and there is finite real estate, essentially. What are any impacts from the election? Are there any impacts from the election? What were you sort of prepared for? And driving, writing down the scenarios, preparing for, and is there anything to note?
No, I think the world honestly has kind of moved on because shortly thereafter we obviously had the vaccine, positive vaccine announcements. And now the worst case scenario would have been some technical tax issues within the US, and that would have only come about if there was a complete sweep of the Democrats in both the presidency, the Senate, and the House, which at this moment looks slightly unlikely. So it is not actually too much. I'm not on my worry list. It's not up there anymore.
There's big discussions about stimulus, you know that. There's a sort of a wrangling, a little bit of a I don't know how big of a bust up it is, but in the markets there's some reaction to a discussion surrounding monetary versus fiscal stimulus today. What does fiscal stimulus, how needed is it in your opinion for the economy? Of course, real estate is such a massive part of the economy and the economic outlook. Is it needed, fiscal stimulus in the United States?
I do think there's probably an element that is, given that we are not obviously handling COVID-19 very well at this moment, and especially in the winter months, until we the bridge that is necessary until we see, a large percentage of the population vaccinated, which 6, 12, 18 months that we can hopefully then look in the rearview mirror and say the pandemic is behind us. So there is that, I think, a necessity, the bridge, as I like to call it, till we get to that new normal.
You most optimistic about right now in sort of the global real estate mindset, the fund itself? What areas do you sort of want to leave with people so they know about that are kind of interesting pockets?
Yeah, I think you get a lot of people, the headlines, the work from home phenomenon, what the impact is on office. And then you have the retail and e-commerce. Without a full appreciation that commercial real estate, there's many sectors, especially in the listed space and ones that, for example, my fund owns, that are doing quite well, from data centers to manufactured housing. The fund owns stuff in Australia, Canada, and the US, to single family rental in the US.
Housing. Sorry to interrupt, but what is manufactured housing?
Manufactured housing is low cost housing, typically a manufactured house that is then put on a concrete slab. And then the manufactured housing communities collects the monthly rental for that concrete slab. So it's a very, and there, it has a lot of barriers to entry, and you do see significant rental increases. And it's, you do see in North America, both Canada and the US and Australia, similar phenomena. And it's been one of the best performing sectors in the US REIT market over the last 20 years. And we see that occurring both in Australia, while we own some exposure there, and also in Canada.
I'm sorry, I interrupted you before. That's so interesting. I did. Said interesting Saturday. So you mentioned that space as well, some of the other optimistic parts that you see.
Yeah, and then healthcare real estate around the world, we have an exposure to because of obviously aging demographics and the safety of the payer network that we see, especially in Western European and some Asian countries. So we do have exposure there.
Fascinating. There, yeah, this is okay. The smaller real estate. There's a couple of questions that came in just exactly on some of the things that you were discussing there. I was reading a couple of headlines about Philippines, different parts of Asia right now that are probably areas where they can see kind of real estate coming back. I wonder if there are any comparisons to draw between certain Asian markets and, the Londons of the world that were incredibly, some will say, overvalued. Where do you sort of see flows out of one and into another in terms of real estate investors?
Yeah, I mean, we look at the gamut of the developed and the emerging markets in terms of listed real estate. Right now, we find enough opportunity with the in the developed markets that we have very little exposure to emerging markets. And emerging markets, you typically would be taking more currency risk, more political risk, And I would also say more operational risk. Many of the companies listed that have exposure to emerging markets are more home builders or more residential for sale builders, which is one of the riskiest forms of real estate out there. So right now we have very little exposure to emerging markets because of the opportunities that we see and good consistent growth or recovery of growth in the developed world. In what I like to call the good growing sectors of data centers, logistics, single family rentals, manufactured housing, they are going to all have positive growth this year through the pandemic, which we think is going to also translate into positive growth going forward.
As something that comes out of the COVID period, do you see, and probably this is in so-called Western countries, do you see more government or less government? And I'm kind of getting at the social housing discussion of cities that, you know, were very expensive. Toronto is a very expensive city to live in. Do you see the socialization of housing coming with sort of greater government after the pandemic?
Yeah, that is for better, for worse. And there's a capitalist side and there's a socialist side of that question or issue. I'm not going to debate that. From a landlord perspective, though, we do see whether it's especially in the Eastern Canada, Canadian provinces, whether it's the California and the city of San Francisco, whether it's in Western European countries, more potential regulation or desire to control rental rate increases or lack thereof, to take the free market out of that. And at the same time, to put more restrictions on the ability to evict someone who is not paying. Or, like I said, I'm balancing the social versus the economic issues here. But as a landlord, that is not necessarily a good thing, that you can't charge what the market bears, or you cannot evict somebody that is not paying their rent. So that's a purely free market type view, but that is a danger from just a landlord perspective that we see this trend increasingly around the world.
Interesting. On balance, in positioning, are you more invested in the United States versus other Western countries? Or you said EM is an area that you're not, you don't move too quickly into. But US, outside of US, can you just lay it out for us a little bit?
Yeah, no, the fund and it is not actually versus its benchmark taking large country bets. And one of the primary reasons for that is the pandemic is a global phenomenon. So it hasn't necessarily created huge differences from a global phenomenon. It's not like one, and yes, there are areas of the world that are handling the pandemic better, but in terms of the impact on the economies, it's quite similar. So then it gets into more of what we always are looking at, supply and demand of real estate or the fundamentals of real estate, which aren't necessarily country driven at this moment in time.
That's fascinating. It is a real sort of leveling of a lot of things because it is such a global situation. Steve Miller, a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much for sharing all of these insights with us today.
Thanks for listening to the Fidelity Connects podcast. Please visit fidelity.ca for more information on future live webcasts. Don't forget to follow Fidelity Canada on Twitter and subscribe to Fidelity Connects on your podcast platform of choice.